Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Syrup Arcade Cast, Mobile Syrup and Syrup Arcade's gaming podcast. I'm your co-host, Dean Daly, and I'm here with the pod's other host, Brad Shankar. How are you doing today, Brad?
Pretty good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Last week I asked you, or our last podcast, I asked you about the D&D movie, if you were excited to watch it. Now that you've seen it, thoughts?
I loved it. Like we said, I'm not really someone who knows anything about D&D. I've literally never played it, so I was going in from like the complete newcomer perspective. I was just someone who knew the directors, their previous movie, Game Night, was like hilarious, so that was really the only frame of reference I had going in, and it really had a lot of that humor and energy as well in the new D&D movie. So yeah, I thought it was great. Loved the cast, the humor, the fantasy. The action was surprisingly good, considering they'd like never done a movie of that budget before. Yeah, I loved it, honestly. And I think you were laughing louder than anyone in the theater, I would say.
Yeah, I loved it too. It was so good. I was just on CBC about it. I was just on CBC about it. And I just loved sharing like how fun it was. It was such a fun movie. I just really enjoyed it.
The necromancer scene killed me. With everything with the graveyard and the talking.
That was a great scene. I plan on watching it again when it comes out, actually comes out. Or I guess when this pod is released, it will be out. But yeah, such a good movie. If you're listening to this, you should watch it. Moving on from that, though, we just have our special guest sitting and listening to us talk about this movie that she hasn't seen. But our very special guest today is Rose Bahar, a previous senior editor for Mobile Syrup, who now works as a game narrative designer at Super Blooms Games, where she's working on a new mobile lifestyle game. I hope that is right. Could I just copy it and pasted it from your LinkedIn? How are you today, Rose?
Absolutely correct. Absolutely perfect. Correct. Thank you so much for having me. It's so good to see your wonderful, beautiful faces. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I think it's the first time you two have seen each other, I guess, like face-to-face in a couple of years, probably.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first time, and I think we had a bit of a feud going on, me and Brad, so this is kind of really the first time that we're coming together and we're, you know, mano a mano. Just kidding.
I don't even...
Brad and I...
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you talking about?
Very close.
Brad...
No, Brad is impossible. I don't think anybody could have a feud with you.
We've had a lot of people come and go through Mobile Syrup over the years since... you left, and you were always one of my favorites. I say to Dean, it's kind of like the telecom reporter role that you were sort of like originating is kind of like the defense against the dark arts teacher role in the Harry Potter franchise, where it's like it's a constantly rotating. We've had like 10 people since, and none have ever quite lived up to you, I don't think. But
Brad, I'm so touched. I love that.
He literally says that all the time, and always highlights his favorite, that you were his favorite. And that's such a common rhetoric.
Yeah, I hope to the new person, to the new telecom person.
Yeah, no disrespect to current.
All right, so let's get into our topic. Actually, no, before that, let's ask Rose, how have you been as a narrative designer? How has that been? That's such a different lifestyle to, you know, write in telecom news. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I think both of you saw me at the beginning of wanting to make that career shift. So I was a telecom reporter until I was in my mid, almost late 20s. And I really knew I wanted to be a creative writer, and I was becoming increasingly convinced that I wanted to be a games writer because of the amount of innovation and experimentation that's possible in that field. And so my first step towards it when I did leave Mobile Syrup and I stopped freelancing was getting a QA job, quality assurance testing job with a very narrative-driven mobile game. And this is how a lot of people get into the business, is they have to go through testing or be a tester at some point. Like, that's if you really want to get into games and you want to start at the bottom rung of the ladder, that's where you go. And then from there, you know, you get the crappy pay and you get the lack of respect and you just kind of like, you know, gotta work through it. And through other QA people I had worked with, people that I started to make connections with, I was able to get my first game design job several years, maybe two or so years after the QA job. And that was at another mobile studio, Jam City. And we got laid off, which is another thing that happens very regularly in the games industry. But thankfully, when we did get laid off, my current employer saw the opportunity that I had, or they saw the value that I had, writing experience as well as game design experience, and they offered me this game narrative designer position. So really amazing. It's very hard to get into this industry. I think everybody knows that. So it always feels lucky, and you always feel very blessed and privileged when you actually make it to some sort of creative position within the industry. And there's still a lot of work to be done to like make it easier to get into. But yeah, long-winded answer. I think I just went off on a tangent. Hopefully it was good.
No, it was good. It was good. And how is this being in this industry as a woman and with this industry so dominated by men?
Yeah. To be fair, the industry that I was in with you guys was also very dominated by men as well, fair. Which is tech journalism.
Yeah.
And so, very fair. But you know, having said that, so that it's been a most of a career spent in that kind of industry. When I actually shifted over to games, and this is a very unusual experience, I started working on more women-dominated teams, and I have ever since. So ironically, perhaps, after I stopped being a tech journalist, I never really had that experience again of being the only woman on the team or one of the very few. After that, I have had, I believe, only women managers, which is really like unusual. And again, been on teams where it's mostly women. And these are games that are more targeted towards the female demographic. So they're mobile games, casual games, design related, or story driven. And a lot of people will look down on those kind of games. But I obviously see a lot of value in them. And to me, it is actually something I'm kind of passionate about. I don't know if you guys remember like the Flash, well, of course you do, the Flash game era, right? Where you're playing Flash games on your browser. That was one thing that really got me into games when we didn't really have much access to other things. Like, we often just had to go to the library as a kid to like play games, and a lot of it was Flash games. And I like that there's still that sort of same mentality with mobile games, which is these are like incredibly accessible in that they're free, and usually like anybody would have access to them because most people have smartphones at this point, or their parents have smartphones. So I see a lot of value in the area, even though it doesn't necessarily get a lot of respect from the broader industry. Yeah, and that was my answer to what is it like being a woman in games. But basically my answer is you can be a woman in games in the mobile industry and find yourself surrounded by other women in games. And that's my particular experience.
No, that's really great. I think that's very good for a lot of other women to know. If they fear being in an industry that's only men, they know there are safe spaces where in mobile gaming, at least, which is great. But speaking of safe spaces, I guess, Rose, how was GDC this year? I know you were there, right, from my understanding?
Yeah, I went down to GDC and I had a great time personally. And I think that's like the experience of a lot of women and people who went there. I say women specifically because what happened at GDC this year was that shortly as it was ending, shortly after, it came out that many or several at least women had been roofied. I think it was more than one. And there was also an instance of somebody like being lured to a hotel room on the like under the intentions of like pitch, or like they were indicated that they were going to pitch their game, but it ended up being more of a sort of overture that was creepy. So there was a lot of sad things that came out. And what I mostly have to say about that is that it's just really disheartening that it's still a really scary place. I have found my feet with people that I now find safe and comfortable. I spent most of my GDC with those people. But when I was younger, you're so much more vulnerable, especially when you're alone. You don't know what's going on. You're in a new city. And it's just, it's a really terrible experience. At the same time, we can't tell women not to go to GDC, right? Because it's still where you find opportunities and it's still where you find jobs, like no matter how scary it might be. So what we have to do is, you know, make things better. And I have a friend and associate here in like New York, E.E. Zong, who like said some really interesting things about how a lot of the like issues happened with game studios partnering with bigger corporations and some of the bigger corporations not taking the steps that they needed to make these events safe. So that's basically what I'll say on that. Brad, did you have any thoughts?
Well, I was just going to say GDC is the Game Developers Conference for people who don't know.
Yeah.
I was just wanting to give a brief intro to it before you start. But then you had a very great point there, so I didn't want to interrupt.
Sorry about that. For anybody who doesn't know, it is a big conference for within the industry. I don't know how much like news comes out of it. Like, do you keep an eye on it, Brad, when you're
with GDC? Historically, Stadia, the reveal of Google Stadia, which died a few months ago, the Google's game streaming service, that was really the only big news that ever came out of GDC in the last several years. Like, Google actually flew me to that to cover it. So that was a pretty big deal. But yeah, historically, it's mostly like an inside baseball sort of thing for developers to kind of share their wealth of knowledge. And, you know, here's how we made the axe in God of War, and maybe other action developers can take note of how to learn. So it's a very good experience for developers in that sense. But, you know, just to add on to what you were saying, you know, I was listening to a few podcasts. One of my favorites is Play Watch Listen, which is a bunch of people in the industry. Mike Bithell, a game developer, Alana Pierce, who's a games writer, Troy Baker, who's an actor, and Austin Wintry, who's a composer. So they all have different kind of backgrounds in the gaming industry. And, you know, they were talking about GDC and how, you know, there is a very big, like, alcohol like sort of culture surrounding it, where like you're kind of being pressured to have drinks, and you know, they're even kind of like, Mike doesn't drink and he just goes for a Coke, and then they look at him like, why aren't you having a drink? And same with Alana, she like doesn't want to drink around that, and then you know, they're kind of like pressuring you to have drinks. And so that kind of just adds on to the what you're talking about, the fear of, you know, someone doing something to your drink, like roofing you or whatever. You know, that's sort of the kind of pressure that is being created there. Right.
That's so true. I think, like, unfortunately or fortunately, it depends on how you look at it, but it's such a networking event. And so there's so many events in the evening, and so many of them take place at clubs or bars. And I think it is a really difficult situation for people who don't drink. But I do think like the solution is probably not to make these events dry, but to like focus on the core root issue of the, you know, predators that do make it into these circles, because I think regardless, they would be dangerous to, you know, young women. So, but I hear you. I think there's certainly too much of a reliance on booze in these kind of networking events as well.
Even tech events, there's a huge reliance on booze as well. I guess there's just less women there. So there's less predatoring happening. I do think I have heard, but like gossip around some predatory stuff, even at tech events though. I don't know for sure or anything. I just heard this gossip before. There's gotta be a way to fix this. And I don't know it, but there has to, I don't know what's the solution, but I think there has to be a way.
There is. And I think the good thing is that we have so many resources for fixing it. And that's when, you know, people throw up their hands. I always think, you know what, there's a lot of brilliant women who have proposals for how to make things safer. And I did just mention one, E.E. Zong, who like does a lot of things here in New York, but like they're all over the place. And if they're properly consulted, things can be super transformative. So I think like, you know, that's what I would recommend to GDC is get those consultants and those people who are really concerned about this stuff and make it a priority. And we could really see some change.
And I would love that. Moving on from this tough topic, though, our conversation today is focused on women. So let's talk about some of the women behind video games. And then after that, we'll talk about women in video games. Rose, do you want to lead us off?
Yeah. When you mentioned this topic of women in games, it just made me think of some of the women that really inspired me. One of them going way back to the beginning being Roberta Williams, who Brad is shaking his head or nodding his head. He knows, you know, like co-founded Sierra Online with her husband and was credited as being like the first creator of a graphic adventure game. So, you know, I think she's known as like the queen or the mom of adventure games. And y'all know me, I love an adventure game. So when I actually learned that a woman was behind one of the first graphic adventure games, it was immensely like gratifying and inspiring to know. And I think it's not necessarily common knowledge either. So it's really wonderful to like pay tribute to these trailblazers and remember that like it's not a new thing for women to be in games. Like women are nerds too. You know, we also like to spend too much time on our computers and not get any sunlight. Not saying that's Roberta's experience, but you know. And then there's also, I wanted to shout out one of my personal faves, who is Megan Geiser. She's also an adventure games icon because she was the person who brought the really like popular Nancy Drew adventure game, PC game series to the world when publishers thought that it was not going to have a big enough audience to make it. They thought like, well, just a kind of, you know, this Nancy Drew thing is so targeted at girls. Like, I don't know if this is worth even making. And she really had to fight to produce it. And it ended up being really successful. So, you know, it's just one of those things where it's very nice to see that these demographics, more marginalized demographics, once they are represented, there are these beautiful success stories. And it's important to push past the, well, I don't know if the money case makes sense. You won't know if the money makes sense until you really properly give it a go with an amazing game. So yeah, that's who I wanted to shout out.
Brad, do you have any shout outs?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, to echo Rose's point, you know, how there have been women in the industry for decades and a lot of them don't get the credit. I mean, one of mine is Kazuko Shibuya. She was the only person at Square Enix, actually, who was on, who's still there, who was on the original Final Fantasy development team 35 years ago. So she actually was the pixel artist responsible for those like iconic sprite work. A lot of the like menu design, a lot of the UI stuff, that was all her. So she was really pivotal in sort of bringing the look and feel of Final Fantasy to life. And for years, she didn't really get credit for that. I mean, we give a lot of credit to, you know, the creator, the director, or the composer, or even the character designer, Yoshitaka Amano, who's like famous for drawing all these beautiful art. But, you know, it was Kazuko's work in sort of taking his art and making it translate to sprites, right? You know, we have very limited resources on the NES, SNES. So she actually came back for like the pixel remasters that they just did, that came out on mobile and PC, to kind of update the sprites. So that's kind of like a nice way of full circle moment. But yeah, she's the only person who worked on the original game 35 plus years ago, and she's still at Square Enix. So I think that's awesome. And I'll, you mentioned adventure games. I'll kind of pivot to like action adventure. I mean, Amy Hennig, is the creator of Uncharted, which a lot of people, I don't think, realize. You know, we give a lot of credit to Naughty Dog right now for The Last of Us and Neil Druckmann and all of that, but like, we wouldn't have The Last of Us without Uncharted, and that all came down to Amy Hennig, because that the sort of like modern AAA action adventure, big budget sort of cinematic game, like Uncharted was basically the, you know, the start of all that, from way back from 2007. That sort of like spearheaded the modern sort of AAA blockbuster, and that was her. Like, she was the writer, she was the director, she did the first three games. And now she's at Skydance working, overseeing Marvel and Star Wars stuff, which is pretty cool, that they're working on there. So, but yeah, I mean, she did basically spearheaded a whole sort of genre of games. And I'll just give a third shout out, Yoko Shimomura. She's my second favorite composer in the gaming industry after only Nobuo Uematsu. You know, she's a composer of Kingdom Hearts, Street Fighter, bunch of Mario games, Live Alive, Xenoblade, Mario Rabbids, so many games she's composed to. Like, her music is incredible. You know, again, we don't see a lot of women composers in the industry either. Certainly not the decades since that she's been doing it. And, you know, my like emo phase in my teenage years, but a lot of time spent listening to her music. So those are definitely the three that I would shout out.
Cool. Thanks, Brad. I don't have three women to shout out because I don't know. I'm not the type of person who really knows a lot about developers and what's going on in the back. I'm very front facing. But I did host a diversity and gaming series. And one of the people I spoke to was Kate Rayner, who is a trans woman for the Vancouver's Coalition for Gears 5. I just wanted to shout her out because I feel like, especially now, there's a lot of things going on with the LGBTQI community, and I feel like they don't really get a lot of like representation or people not really paying them any mind. So I wanted to give her a shout out, and it's cool that she's working on in a Canadian game studio as well, which I love.
Well, and fun fact with that is they've been doing a lot of work with Unreal in the last few years since Gears 5 came out with Epic. They the Coalition actually helped make that really cool photorealistic Matrix demo with Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss that they released on PS5 and Xbox, I think, 2 years ago. So that was like partially made in Canada by her team. They helped with that. So
I didn't know that. That's actually really cool.
That is very cool. I'm learning so much right now.
Yeah, Brad is just a wealth of information.
I know. Yeah, I know. Great. He truly is.
Also, just kind of like a callback. Last month, we did speak to another woman developer, a Black woman developer. We spoke to Indigo Doyle. So if you want to hear from another woman developer, just head back a couple of episodes ago. I believe it was our episode of the Syrupcast 4, as we're currently on 6. Yeah, I mean, both Brad and I have definitely interviewed a lot of woman. I think Brad more so than I have. But we've interviewed a lot of women in gaming. So if you guys ever want to learn more about some of the women behind gaming, definitely check out a lot of our articles. I have a whole series about why we need more diversity in gaming, and a lot of that focused on women in gaming. And I can't recall any of Brad's articles at the top of my head. So, Brad, you want to shout out some of your articles that interviewed any women?
Sure. I mean, my most recent Canadian developer interview was with Rocket Adrift, a Toronto-based studio. It's a three-person team, a trans woman, another woman, and a man. So it's primarily a women-led team. They're working on a game about a non-binary character. It's like a cyberpunk horror game. They actually just won an award from Ubisoft, like funding from Ubisoft Toronto for that. So that's, the game's called Psychroma. So that was my most recent piece. Also give a shout out to, it was a book I read I think it came out last summer. It's called Gamer Girls, 25 Women Who Built the Video Game Industry. I actually did a brief piece on it. It's written by Mary Kenny, who works at Insomniac. She worked on Miles Morales, and she's working on the Wolverine game right now. And so she basically did a lot of research and did interviews with, 25 women in the industry from all different roles. You know, someone who worked on Gone Home, you know, some of the people we mentioned, you know, Roberta Williams, Yoko Shimomura, Amy Hennig, a bunch of people. So that was just a nice sort of spotlight. And it sort of approached as like an all ages sort of thing. So it's really great for young girls as well, to sort of get that visibility of people in the industry. I think that's a great piece to look for anyone really who's interested in this topic.
And we also have a Tech Effect episode just focused on women focused on diversity in gaming, which again focuses on women. So that will be coming up in the future, I believe in April or May. Rose, it looks amazing. Like you had something to say.
I just feel so heartwarmed. We're talking about all of these cool, amazing women and femme-presenting people, and it's just like, wow. I mean, it's very nice to be able to feel this way. So I thank you for making this the focus, because I think, it can often get lost. And when you're actually at an event, say GDC, and you are like the only woman in a sea of guy developers, it feels quite isolating, but to sort of talk about this community is just really heartwarming and exciting.
I love that. I'm happy that you feel heartwarmed by our conversation topic, and I'm very happy that you can join us. But of course, we still have more to go. So one of the fun parts of this podcast, I guess, is just some highlights of some badass women in video games that people can look up to developers as well. But I feel like for me in games, it's like I look up to seeing someone like Miles Morales in a game, and I just love that. And there is plenty of women in games, and I want to shout out some of our favorites. So this time I'm going to start off with Mobile Syrup's number one gamer, Brad.
Don't we want to let Rose take it away first?
I mean, I let Rose take it away last time. I don't know. We can let Rose take it away if we want.
I'm happy to. I'm actually like really curious to see, and I don't want to repeat in case Rose has one that I might have mentioned.
All right, Rose, you got this, I guess.
I don't think that I will, because I think my main focus, and I know I already mentioned this a little bit earlier, but what really made me get into games was this Nancy Drew series of games. And I can talk more about the main character, Nancy Drew. She was something that I didn't frequently see in media, period, which was an incredibly capable woman, like young woman. She could fly a helicopter. She could work at a museum. She could, she had all of this diverse range of skills. And she was super humble, super matter of fact about it. There wasn't even any sort of stereotyping where it's like, you know, kind of Elle Wood style, like she's ditzy, but she's actually brilliant. It wasn't even that. It was just, this is just a very capable woman. Like, and I will never forget how much of an effect that had on me, because the series of games, they all focused on different locations, and they were also somewhat educational. You would like learn about the ancient Mayans or Harry Houdini or something like that. And it really like, it was no joke. I remember writing in my diary, like, how can I be more like Nancy Drew? I need to, you know, get these different skills. And, you know, by the time I'm an adult, I do not have half of the survival skills that she has. But I do think that that attitude of I can do this and, you know, feeling like anything is possible definitely did carry through. So that just has an, I just a forever, like, really deep spot in my heart. I don't know if that's a saying, deep spot in my heart. We're going to go with it. But yeah. And, you know, since then, I have played a lot of amazing women characters in games. I think some of them that I could shout out would be like the, I don't know if either of you guys played Paradise Killer, but it's something that I always talk about because it's such a strange and unique game. It's kind of like style is sort of Japanese vaporwave. It's story just throws you into like the murder of some gods in this kind of bizarre land. And you play as a private investigator who's trying to figure out like who killed the gods. And yeah, so I'm always just a sucker for any badass woman who's solving a crime. That generally will do it for me. And I think another thing that I found kind of interesting in terms of characters that really stand out to me is the work that's done by the studio that created Fran Bo and Little Miss Fortune. So this is an indie studio and it's run by a like husband wife team. So again, representation here. I think the wife is really does most of the writing and the like and the designing, and she's created like these really fascinating short, like fairly short horror games that kind of center on young girls experiencing really difficult things. And if that sounds bad to you, yeah, it is kind of intense, you know, so definite trigger warning. But I think it's something you see very rarely is like these kind of more intense experiences of girlhood that are often portrayed, if they are at all in mainstream games, portrayed as just a plot point, like, ah, oh, my daughter died and that's why I'm messed up, but very rarely taken from the experience of the young girl who's having the terrible experience herself, if that makes sense. So I just think it's very kind of, it's really interesting. It's really unique within the world of games, and they are themselves little adorable badasses. So that's another thing I suggest.
Thank you. These sounds like very unique suggestions. I don't think these were on Brad's list. I doubt it. And they were definitely not on mine. Brad, you want to go now?
Sure, yeah. I guess I'll start with an indie game. I mean, I think Gone Home is a really good one that I mentioned briefly. You know, it is a little tainted right now, unfortunately, because the creator was, you know, the lead director on that game was, you know, outed as a very abusive person. So I can't not acknowledge that. But, you know, there were some other women on that team. And I think the core story is still one that resonates. And it's sort of, for people who don't know, it's like an adventure game where you're in a house and you're just sort of piecing together, like your family's gone, you're piecing together what happened. It has a very sort of like horror overtone and initially where you're like, did something bad happen here? But then you realize it's actually, no, it's like a coming of age story, coming out story where like your sister fell in love with another girl and basically they ran away together. And it's like a very touching sort of story. And it came out, you know, in 2013, like years before we sort of started seeing those stories in a prominent way. Like even like The Last of Us only sort of like hinted at Ellie's sexuality initially. But like this was a very like outward story with LGBT themes, right? And it was a very like interesting way as well of telling a story where it's through the environment. It's like narratives, environmental storytelling where you're piecing things together. without actually ever technically seeing the characters. Like, there's some voiceover and there's some items or whatever, but it's a very, like, sort of compelling way of telling a story. So I thought that was...
I love that game, and also I think it scared me more than any, like, more overt horror game. There was just something about it. Yeah,
you don't know what's going on here at first. Yeah, and then it's also like a 2-hour game, which I love, because you know, people get so upset about that nowadays. But you know, I've ranted about it many times. Games are too long and budgets are too big, and I'm happy to get small, tight experiences like that. I will give a shout out as well. I mean, I have to. Final Fantasy is my favorite series, so there's several games in the series. I'll give a quick shout out to 6. That's a game that doesn't really have a main character. It's just a variety of characters. But like the two of the standouts, the de facto protagonist is Terra, but I would say like the standout character is Celeste. She's like an army general who kind of has an epiphany, rebels against the Empire, and then sort of deals with depression afterwards. Like, there's a very like pivotal scene where she's like dealing with losing everything and sort of dealing with those emotions. And you know, there's a whole opera house scene where there's like no dialogue, no like voice acting or anything, and it's just conveyed through like the beauty of the pixel art and the music. And yeah, I just think that's a very compelling character, especially for like the SNES era, which historically, you know, we didn't see narrative being that as much of a focus in a lot of those games. And then for me, Final Fantasy VII, what I love about that game is it's a deconstruction of tropes in a lot of ways, where like the main character Cloud is sort of like the anime swordsman guy, but you find out that he's really just a big dork. And it's that kind of applies to like the female characters as well, where you look at like Tifa, who admittedly is overly sexualized, but when you kind of get past that, she's a very like sensitive character, and you know, she can like kick your ass. So she's got all, she's like a badass martial artist, but she's got a very sensitive side to her behind that. And then on the flip side, Aerith, who is sort of this, she looks like the typical, oh, damsel in distress. She's just the healer girl, the maid. She's like really spunky, and she's got a lot of personality, and she's not just a full damsel in distress. She's got a lot of agency to her character. She, in a lot of ways, is the person who saves the day. Like, even though she does die halfway through the story, it's not in service. It's not like typical trope of, you know, dying in service of the male's character, the male's story. She actually saves the day in the end. So I think that's a really interesting example in that game. And I'll just give another shout out as well to God of War Ragnarok. I had a big thing with that game about the whole fatherhood angle, and we've talked about that. But I think part of the reason that fatherhood angle works is because they have a very strong mother character to juxtapose Kratos. I think Freya is a fantastic, really compelling character. She sort of starts off as like a villain. She starts off as your friend in the 2018 game, and then she goes into a more villainous role. But there's like, because a game can afford you a lot of time to just sort of walk around with characters, right? You have several hours where you're like begrudgingly working with her, and her and Kratos sort of have a heart to heart where she, you know, realizes that as a mother, you know, her strengths, her failings, how she failed her child, how she, you know, isn't defined by just being a failed mother. She can move past that. You know, she can work together with Kratos to make the world a better place. She's his equal in a lot of ways. She actually, you know, spoilers fan of the game, she replaces Atreus as the character beside you, and she's more powerful than Atreus in a lot of ways. So I just really like that dynamic, and there's no like forced love interest angle with it either. I feel like a lot of lesser stories would have been like, oh, you know, he lost his son, she lost her son, you know, they're single now, let's put them together. But it was never about that. It was just like a very strong sort of platonic bond between these two people who are equals in a lot of ways. And yeah, I thought she was a really good character.
Cool. I she was a good character. I miss Atreus though. But it's fine. I also love Agrabota from that game as well, who is also a lot of fun. My first one, I guess, would be Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice, which follows Senua, a warrior, and as she goes to Helheim to save her lover, Dylan. I like the premise a lot because I always find that like there's a lot of like that Mario always saving Princess Peach kind of a situation. Whereas in this game, it was flipped. She's trying to save her lover, And not only that, it's just to deal with a lot of voices in her head, and it just showed how strong she was. I loved that game a lot, actually. Another game I'd call out would be Control, with Jesse Faden, where she's the director of, I don't even remember what it's called. I haven't played this game in a while. But she's like the director of this whole thing, and she has to figure out the mysteries and save her brother as well. I believe she has to try to save her brother as well. I just love the idea of like women saving men. I don't know why.
it's the best.
I just think it flips it. I think it's like, it's a lot. I think it's just, it kind of flips the whole motion of that whole, like, men have to be the one who are macho and save the women. And, I've always kind of didn't like that. So in these games where it's the opposite, I really enjoy it. A game I'm currently playing right now, is called Ender Lilies, Quietus of Nights. And it's just, it starts off as this little girl, and she, when she jumps, she kind of, like, when she dodges, she kind of just flails. It kind of just falls to the side, really. It's not really a dodge. But the more you progress through the game, the more stronger she technically becomes, and I mean, she employs spirits and stuff, so it's really cool. But I like how you can just see her evolution as throughout the game, and then how she's just become a more of a badass, which I really enjoy. Yeah, those are my three games I'd talk about. I mean, there are tons of games, though, that either have very strong women characters or focus on women. Even Spider-Man Miles Morales, can you remind me her name? I don't remember her name. You know what?
Are you talking about Finn?
That's the enemy, right? Yeah. Even that game had Finn, who was great. There's also, you know, Horizon Zero series as well. I have a friend who I play games with every night, and she refuses to play games where there's not a woman main character, which is cool. Very fun, I think, because like, for instance, like, she'll have, like, she had to play Dishonored because she wanted to play Dishonored 2, which stars Emily instead of Corvus, and I love, like I wish I had her library on hand, because there are so many games that focus on women, and I just feel like they don't get highlighted as much as the other games out there, or the
people. Well, and to your point, you know, it's kind of funny, because games that do give you the choice, a lot of the time the women character is the more interesting of the two. Like, no disrespect to male Commander Shepard, but like, Jennifer Hale is the definitive Shepard for a lot of people. Like, she's just she gives a better performance, just straight up.
And that's her favorite game.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey. The developers only wanted to include a female character. It was Ubisoft who forced them to include a brother, and you could choose between one or the other. But most people agree Cassandra is the better of the two. And same thing with Cyberpunk 2077. I mean, I think the female V is more interesting than the male version. And a lot of the time, I think that comes down to the performance and the writing, and it's just the developers have their heart more into making that character. Because kind of to Rose's point, you know, earlier, where games have such a unique ability to for storytelling, and no other medium like lets you embody a character in that same way, right? Like, even if you watch a TV show, you spend X amount of hours with the character, you don't actually get to be them, you know, in the same way that you do in a game. And so, yeah, games really are like the best like empathy tool to just kind of put you in the shoes of a character. And yeah, that's why I like, to your friend's point, I like, whenever there's an option, I always go with the female version. It's just like, I get to play as a guy every day in real life, right? So like, why would I not want to do something different in a game? That's part of the appeal to a game for me. So
that's so true. And that's such a fascinating topic of the ability to play a different gender in a game and explore that. I mean, of course, it's not reality, but it is a good... it's still a useful tool, as you said. And I think I often find myself playing like huge muscle bound dudes on the other side.
Sure, yeah.
I always want to be like the big barbarian, just for changing it up.
That's cool. I love that. Yeah, there are a lot of options. If you're listening to this and haven't played a game where you're the protagonist and who's a woman, you're sorely missing out, because first of all, there's a lot, and you're just missing out on some great games, but you're also missing out on that side of things as well, on the taking a look on the other side and being more empathetic and putting yourself in a woman's shoe or a femme person's shoe. Yeah, that is all we have for today. Any last shout outs from either of you?
Oh, I wanted to just shout out that the studio that I was talking about earlier that did Franbo and Little Miss Fortune is called Kill Monday. And I couldn't think of it at the time, but now I remember it. And shout out to all the women in games. Like, honestly, it sounds cheesy, but it just makes a real difference. I think, especially when you are in a harder situation. I know that not everybody is in my situation where I have a very like women-led, women-dominated team. Know that, you know, being that one woman on the team, if you are, or being one of the few, is making a difference and it's appreciated. You might hear the haters more. You will hear the haters more. You might even get terrible, terrible stuff said about you online. But there are so many young girls and women who appreciate you. And also there are men who appreciate you too. It's just that the haters, you know, often sound, make their voice heard, and they can be incredibly toxic. But there is so much love for what you're doing and appreciation for just even representing within the industry. And you know, there's appreciation for it because there is still, it's still unfortunately can be extremely challenging. So just sending love to everybody. Also, please do note that I think on Twitter, which I'm at Rose Behar, B-E-H-A-R, I think my DMs are open, or I'll make sure to open them. But if anybody is looking for, you know, guidance or mentorship and they're new in their career, definitely feel free to reach out. And this applies to anybody. Not just women or, femme people, but really anybody, because I think it's hard to get into games. And if you are just a person who's not in that world, you deserve to have as much access to it as anybody else. But they're much like any creative industry, there's a lot of nepotism. So, and like, you know, soft nepotism. So I'm always down to help out and give advice where I can.
Thank you, Rose. That's so sweet. my shout out would be to Rose. Thank you for joining us. And Brad, a shout out?
That was going to be mine too.
I know. I just stole it right before you.
I was going to say, it's great to have you on. I think that's great. It's a cool, first of all, full circle thing to have you back here, having actually, worked on the site, but also, to the point of the visibility, just having someone, a woman come in and talk about working in the industry and having that, showing that it can happen. And, even obviously I'm not a woman, but it's inspiring to me too, right? Because I love games, and, there's always a part of me that's like, oh, it'd be kind of cool to, write on a game or something like that. So to see someone who literally came from the same side as me, working in games now, like that's inspiring, right? To women and everyone, right?
I know, and I think you'd be a really wonderful game storyteller.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I'm really blushing right now. Eep.
Anything you want to plug on your end in terms of the work you're doing, or anyone to follow, or anything, closing thoughts you want to, partake on us?
If you do follow me on Twitter, then I will post about the game that I'm working on with my team that's coming out next month, I think. So, if all goes well. But if you follow me on social media, you'll see.
I'm excited. I follow you, so I can't wait to see it. And to end this off, that's it. Thanks for listening to the CF Arcadecast. You can find me on Twitter at The Daily Dean and my Instagram at My Daily Dose. and of course on mobilecope.com, where you can read about my feelings on the Diablo 4 beta. Brad, where can people find you? And what
I'm on do you have? Twitter at Brad Shankar, BradShankar. Of course, MobileCope as well. I guess by the time this goes live, I'll probably have something up on Resident Evil 4. I just beat the remake, so I'm trying to put together. It's a bit late now at this point, so the reviews went up and the game's out, but I'll try to put up some kind of unique angle on it. So by the time this is up, you'll find out what that is. But yeah, that game's amazing, and go play it.
And as always, you can find Brad and my content on mobilecope.com and on Twitter and on Instagram at Mobile Syrup. And if you go far back enough, you can even find Rose's content.
Back in the crypts.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.